Kill.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kill Shuffle.
Hi, y'all.
I'm Donald.
I'm Dylan.
And we have some big hitters to talk about this week.
We do.
And we're going to be reviewing albums from Deaf Heaven, Halsey, Too Mellow, and The Joy Formidable. Just four.
Interesting order, you have to put that in.
It certainly is. It's all beef this week. There's no little EPs or sort of 30-minute punk albums or anything. It's all kind of big, beefy albums this week. So
yeah,
it's a slightly smaller menu, but a more filling menu.
Yeah, very acute yet obtuse, yes. In the music taste department. We don't know who's gonna love all this stuff.
Will we even love this stuff?
Exactly. Where have you been?
I've been good. Yeah, it's been super, super busy. But stuff like wheels are moving music wise, which is always nice to see.
Fantastic.
We may even have Drying Weather may even have some single release dates of their own soon. We'll see. Mm. It's been a hot minute since released something, but I know you had your single out last week.
I did. Is that been a week already?
Okay. I think it has.
It has. Yeah, that's fun listening to it again.
Yeah.
I'm already like, should I change that a bit for the album?
Oh.
I'm like that. All right. Should I make an album version?
Kanye.
Kind of have an album mix in mind, because what you do when you do
singles, the label released it without your permission.
Exactly. Oh my god. Apparently they're professionals, and the biggest professionals in the business for promo, and somehow they fuck it up.
Mm.
But anyway, I digress. That's for another conversation.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing when you're mixing singles up to a release.
Yeah.
Over a long span of time, because I see it with tons of bands, like I don't know, Darren Ray, for example. They do a single a year.
Yeah.
And the third year is the album. Very weird way of doing it. Other bands do it too.
Yeah.
Sometimes just the single mix sounds totally different by the end.
Yeah, I know. Owen was telling us that the single mix of Play Fire ended up being like totally different on the album. It just didn't fit with the.
It needs to gel well with the others.
Yeah, he had to totally remix it.
So that's what I'm seeing, because since Room to Dream, my skills have gotten even better.
Okay.
If you can imagine, because I think that came out pretty nicely.
It did.
For an amateur effort.
Yeah.
Master-wise.
JP Reed was absolutely flummoxed that you managed to get that sound at home, so.
In my home?
Yeah.
In my little MacBook Pro, no.
Did he send that away to be mixed? No. He didn't. He did it all by himself.
Exactly, yeah.
It sounds great. It does sound good. One piece of, I suppose, piece mm-hmm. of news, at least we hope that it becomes news, is that Freedom Day is coming.
Yes.
Soon.
Yes.
October 22nd, baby.
Yeah. Oh, that's big.
Because a couple of months after our UK brethren, but we are getting there.
That means the music is going to be back.
Yes.
And the arts.
Yeah.
Theatre and stuff like that, hopefully, as well.
Yeah.
And
gigs. I actually have gigs booked
in. I have
in.
A gig soon.
Yeah.
Asiwifa are playing New Year's Eve in Dublin.
Correct.
In the Workman's Club, which
I might
is
be going
hilarious
to see
as a proposition.
It is. Yeah. New Year's Eve. If you didn't have plans, that'd be a great.
Everybody who loves math rock fitting in a tiny little room.
Yeah, I'll try to see what I have booked, because in theory, gigs that are happening, post the 22nd can go ahead as normal. So,
okay.
I've got New Dad on the 11th of November, Cut Copy on the 12th of November, Asawifa on the 14th in Kilkenny, because I wouldn't miss him on a tour.
No, that's good, Alicia.
Yeah. Soda Blonde on the 9th of December. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's some really fun gigs to have booked in, so I can't wait. And Dream Theatre are coming to the island of Ireland for the first time in like 20 years. They're playing the SSE Arena in Belfast.
That's going to be entertaining.
With bells on, if you're into that sort of thing. And I know a lot of people aren't, but I really am.
I could take it or leave it, but I appreciate the fact that they found our country once again.
It's about bloody time. They'll spin by, you know, Wembley, and they'll do the UK arenas and stuff like that, but they have not come to. Yeah, I think they played RDS maybe back in like, you know, 2006 or something, and that's
okay.
Like the last time. So
it's a bit. It's a lot, actually.
It's a long time.
Yeah, but anyway, all this to compensate for the fact that some festivals like Electric Picnic are kind of definitely not happening this year, as they've just announced.
Kind of definitely
not
happening. Yeah.
Whether it be the license not checking out, or bands not coming in, or just this.
It wasn't. I knew it wasn't all of the above.
Not helping.
Yeah. No, it's true. Oh, is that a cat? Are we a cat at the door?
Yes. All
I mean, by all means. No, the thing about the festivals is I think anybody with half a brain knew they weren't going to go ahead this year. Electric Picnic for the Irish Festival Circuit finishes out the year, and it's always been a start of September, like the last gasp before back to school time. So doing it in late September was really never going to be a thing. And obviously now with Delta and stuff like that, it's pushed back the reopening. But hopefully, please God, we will go and see real life gigs with other real people where we don't have to, you know, social distance, wear masks, any of that stuff.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, I mean, so I wasn't like holding on for like this be the end all.
Yeah,
first gig I'll make, but if it's not the last day of the year, it's the last one I could possibly make this year.
And finally, shout out Scattered Ashes, who's, I think they'll be the first gig that I'll see, which is on the 9th of September. They're playing the Button Factory, and I think a couple of tickets have just been released due to sort of capacities going up slightly. It's still going to be socially distanced, all seated, etc, etc, but
that's all right.
But you know, just in case, if you're thinking about seeing some fun, frosty, brutalist post-punk,
I always am,
then you know, then I think there's a couple of extra tickets for that one. But yeah, Dylan, will we kick into the reviews?
We shall. All of which, not including Iron Maiden or Kanye, but our own little mix. So yeah,
but it's our own mix, and I think I'm gonna have to insist.
I listened to both before 7 a.m. this morning.
This guy,
that's the kind of clock I run on.
He's made it time.
To be fair, I kind of fast forwarded through the Iron Maiden, and I'm the one who's more of the fan of both of us.
Yeah.
Long review short. It sounds like they're gasping for air.
Okay, like, there's your 5 out of 10 review. Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
So now that we've done the Iron Maiden review,
yes.
I simply must insist that we begin with Death Heaven and Infinite Granite.
Yes, you're real showstoppers for what year was it?
2018.
Oh, wow, okay, I missed it.
Yeah, as I've said before, I've gone on about incessantly, Ordinary Corrupt Human Love was my moment of sort of understanding as far as Death Heaven goes, and my number one album of 2018. It is such a treat when I have an hour to spare to just put that vinyl on, and that album is just, and we'll talk about some comparisons with this one, but just for an album that is recorded sort of essentially sort of live to tape, it's about as perfect as that sound can get from
that
money.
Sound being lush, violent, black metal meets what comes next.
Theatrical, major key, like life affirming, I don't know, bliss. It's an insane combo.
Yeah, that they've got lots of tricks in their sleeve.
Yes.
Whether they show it this time around, who knows?
It's absolutely for certain. So Infinite Granite is a very different beast, and it arrives, as I say, 3 years after Ordinary Corrupt Human Love, and totally different, you know. It's a shorter album, not by much, but you can feel it. It's not an album of sort of shorter interludes and longer kind of 11-12 minute epics. It's fairly evenly spaced collection of pretty, you know, medium to long, like 5-7 minute songs.
I mean, like the first interlude comes up in the fourth song.
Yeah,
so like,
and it's the only one.
That's
the only breather. On the record is that, what is
from
it, Neptune
very,
Raining Diamonds,
from a very
called.
Breathy album.
Yeah, which they build it in this time.
They do.
They build it right in. The big difference, I think, just to compare it like to the sound, because I think they have had a lot of different sounds. Sunbather was very much that kind of like black metal song, shoegaze song, black metal song, shoegaze
exactly.
song.
You know, it was quite schizophrenic in its in its purpose. But yeah,
and I love it for what it is. But I think they've evolved that approach, and they brought that as far as they could go, I think, on the last album, in terms of having a black metal core of like the shrieked vocals and like the blast beats, and having that as the backbones of the songs. So here they flipped it on its head, and they've gone, okay, we've done the live in a room, live to tape, all analog, like we are a tight unit playing kind of this blissful black metal, and now we're getting Justin Meldal Johnson in. Who, you know, who we know from, well, first of all, he produced Secrets of the Lost Satellite by Ken Andrews, but he also did After Laughter and the self-titled Paramore, Art of Doubt by Metric, you know, M83, his last couple albums. Like, this guy is pop producer extraordinaire. So we're going to get him in and make it sound like a polished studio production and basically bring out all of those melodic elements and make them the backbone and just sprinkle in the black metal stuff.
Sprinkle in the black metal stuff, certainly. Just a little bit of salt. And essentially this time around it's almost fully a shoegaze album.
I think with
more melodic sensibilities than a kind of like a dizzying effect that normal shoegaze would have, where you get kind of lost and you can't figure a melody, you're just there for the vibe.
My Bloody Valentine being the perfect example. Like, it just sweeps you up and sort of shoots you
maybe
along.
Get like three slowly discordant chords riffing over like kind of a mid-tempo thing. But this time around it sounds very hard-hitting, because they are that. They were already that, so they carry on the sensibilities that most shoegaze bands don't even get to start with.
No.
Or don't even get to.
No.
Right.
And the thing is, no shoegaze band has Daniel Tracy on drums. And it's like...
That's the first thing
you couldn't have this band sound like sort of another, you know, Nothing or Dive or whatever, Citizen. I don't know too many modern shoegaze bands, but regardless, very few of them have a drummer who is so obviously like a polymath kind of like metal drummer who also loves jazz. And
he's not from this shoegaze planet.
Yeah, breakbeat and hip hop, and he just has so much to offer in terms of like you never know what he's going to be doing. A part could be this beautiful, blissful, like kind of chilled out part, shoegaze part, and he's like going insane on the hi-hats or the toms or
doing
whatever.
A pumping solo or something.
Yeah, like grace notes on the snare. He's doing whatever, no matter when you tune into what he's doing. He reminds me of Travis Barker in that way, in that like he can elevate material that's quite, you know, that can be quite plain in parts, but he can just elevate that with his drumming. It's amazing. Or you know who reminds me of Astronoid also.
Okay.
Where the drums are the thing you just listen to the whole time. Yeah.
I'd say he really is the, for me, kind of the saving grace.
Saving grace.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, like, don't find this boring at all, but he's the first thing that grabs my attention and carries me through some of the stuff that may wash together a bit.
Okay.
A little bit.
Okay.
Maybe not a lot, as much as I was expecting, but it did surprise me a bit with how varied it was, how memorable the songs can be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most memorable song on the whole record is probably Grey Mass of Colour. Like, that song, just to me anyway, sounds like one of those songs we talk about every, you know, couple episodes, like a song that's chiseled from the Great Mountain of Songs. Like, I cannot imagine a time where that...
It's a classic off the bat,
It's a classic. That's a classic song. And it just...
Very, very... The most pop-centric thing you get.
Yeah, I think so. Vocals, super Smiths... Mm-hmm. You know, we don't like Morrissey as a human, but good singer. I think it sounds quite Morrissey, you know. But then also, you've got the bass gets its time to shine, the doo-doo-doo during the verse, really great. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, it just busts the door down. And everybody talks about, okay, the first time in this album that we hear kind of metal or that we hear screams is on Mombasa, which is the obvious point. But actually, as early as Great Mass of Colour, you can hear George... kind of doing that howl, that kind of black metal scream over the end of Grey
Mass of
Colour.
I'd say even on the first Shellstar, there's one at the very end.
There is,
end.
Yeah,
there's like a very reverbed single scream that goes off somewhere.
They still, that's the thing. I think this album is much more of a Trojan horse of black metal than people are giving it credit for.
Yeah.
There's a lot of power in a lot of these
songs.
That's
true. Like, first listen, you may only hear it in Mombasa.
Yeah.
There is more.
Yeah, like Villain, that's another one that has a huge...
Villain, dude.
Villain's great.
Villain's good.
Great.
Villain sounds evil and like a weird space
like
demon at the end.
Sexy evil. Like, he's kind of doing these real cool... Like, because I think, again, that's the song that has kind of the breakbeat in it and then got these whispers. But you're right, at the end, it's like kind of goes to like wall of harmonies, which again, harmonies in a Death Heaven song, you just wouldn't think of it, but then... these huge screams that kind of finish out the song.
Kind of sounds
awesome.
Almost like Devin Townsend's Destruction. Or just, what was that first one he did with the project? The one that has Julia in it. Or Jeweler. It has a bit of a breakbeat kind of thing.
Are you talking about the one that has the like the purple and black covers?
Yes.
Deconstruction?
Yes.
Yeah.
Bit of a Devin thing going on here as well.
I can hear it. Yeah, I can hear it. Mm-hmm. I think there's quite a bit of
wherever the vocals are going this time seems a bit more chill, Devin.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Definitely. And like just such dexterity on display, I think, from George Clark. Like, you know, for a man who up till this point, with very few exceptions, mm-hmm. has just had, you know, one of the best kind of death gurgles in metal. Like, I think he's got a fantastic howl, but he's, you know, I think it's almost as much of a pleasant surprise as, oh, like, you know, Bjorn from Soilwork, you know, who just screamed exclusively on the first two albums. Oh, he's got like an insane, like, you know, 4-octave range, and he's got this, you know.
It's like when I heard Danny Filth doing pop vocalizing like duets for the first time.
You're going like, what the hell? This person had all of this in his locker, right, and he would never showed it before. Phenomenal vocal performance, I think. Anyway, I think it's just such
I think so too.
It's a really,
I do
really
think so too.
He does affecting vocal performance.
He does as much as he can while keeping within their new path.
Yeah.
I would have welcomed a bit more of something else.
Okay.
A bit more just reach above the kind of you know, he keeps on a tone for a while during the whole thing.
Yeah, but then, right. You've got something like the Course of the Gnashing, where it's like he's doing essentially like a power ballad. Like,
true.
You know, to hear these howls.
Well, for the most part, it's not too far projected over what you could muster with that, but it's very melodic.
It is. I think. Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe that's more the production than the actual range on his voice. But you know, I agree with you. But I think at the same time, it does have a sound. Like, it definitely, it all contributes to the album having a very distinctive sound. And I think, as always with Death Heaven, you know, because their covers are one thing that have, you know, the Sunbather cover has become a meme. But that's because it's a meme because it was so iconic.
Yeah.
And then The Ordinary Cup of Human Love, that woman in the street, it's so evocative of something. And then this as well, the album name Infinite Granite, and then having that giant sort of black hole style blob of blue on the front. I think
visualizers, echo location stuff, it's very cool.
I don't even know what it's supposed to be, but it all just feeds into the feeling of the album, which I think comes across perfectly.
Well, if you have the visualizers on, it just emotes the music perfectly. Yeah.
But that could be a satellite view of Neptune. You know what I mean?
Exactly,
it could be iron filings on a table. Yeah. You don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think, like you say, I was saying, like, the Trojan Horse, I think, like, some of the guitar tones, I mean, Other Language has maybe the heaviest guitar tone they've done towards the end. It is
towards the end,
and then gigantic.
The start is very glittery and technically provisioned, right? It's very kind of almost sounds like a synth.
Yeah.
Digitized weirdness going on.
And there are synths, which is a new thing for them. But mm-hmm. but that does, you're absolutely right. And I think it kind of sweeps into sort of indie waters. There's a little bit of that song that sounds a bit like Foles.
A bit of grooviness that Foles kind of have.
And I say, like Chillwave, I agree with you. Like, there's, you know, I talk about Uppermost all the time. At the start of that song, you're like, oh, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, a bit more electronic approach, but that Uppermost could put something out like this.
I adore that. It's kind of where my love for the album really shines through over the other songs.
It's a really strong highlight, that one.
You get more room to breathe, for sure.
Yeah.
Even though the other songs have a lot of that stuff, like Great Mass of Colour, just go for the huge walls of melodies, whereas Other Language kind of takes a bit to go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely more atmospheric, but it's just like, mm-hmm. that one's all about the music. Great Mass of Colour is all about the hooks.
Yes.
And the melodies. I think, I just think, you know,
as the less shoegazy of the lot, which is why I may like it the most.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah, I think although we both like My Vitriol, and I think
that's true.
The band that this most reminds me of in its approach is probably My Vitriol, particularly on In Blur, which I think sounds like My Vitriol meets Typo, which is always a good thing.
Well, to be fair, I don't get the vocalist of My Vitriol, he doesn't get lost in the music, in the mix. Whereas I think these vocals kind of they go along with the guitars; they're on the same level.
Yeah,
which is intentional, and it works incredibly well.
Yeah,
he's like a human synth for the most part. Really, that's a compliment.
Yeah. I do think it yeah, well, just I suppose it's just the approach of, like, you know, those kind of, it's the shoegaze parts mixed with loads of other stuff is the reason why I think it reminds me of My Betrayal. But vocally, yes, yeah, I think it depends on how you listen, because this album has a lot more to give, I think, through, I mean, I know I got a lot more out of it through headphones than I did on speakers. It sounds great, but picking out the little subtleties and even just how his voice kind of lifts above the mix is much more obvious on headphones. But but yeah, I agree, it's not, you know, it's not a pop. We're going to talk about some productions this week where it's very much like that pop thing of, like, pushing the vocalist out the front. I agree, he's definitely folded in with everything. It's more of a song approach than a vocal approach. Yeah,
but I like this a lot more than I expected, to be honest.
I'm so glad. Did you didn't jam with Ordinary Corrupt then? No.
Not really. Wow. No, I thought it had too much on its plate, whereas this one is going, maybe stuck between being too little and being, well, it's focused on a single genre intent, right? It's not.
I think it
bridges it more seamlessly. I'll say that.
Yeah, but I don't just hear shoegaze. I mean, I think it's an easy thing to say, but what you're right. Yeah. We can't think of a shoegaze band that this really sounds like. I just think they sound like themselves. Mm. I think they really have such a unique,
it's a lot more identifiable sound. It's a lot more relaxed this time around. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it just depends on your palate. Like, actually find Ordinary Corrupt a really relaxing listen.
Yeah, at parts, for sure.
I know it's...
But just some people just can't do the black metal, no matter how relaxing the background
is. But then it's like, find Mole quite relaxing, you know, even though it's super intense. But it's the chords, feel of the songs more so than the intensity of the music. Mm-hmm. And I think this album is like the flips it on its head. Mm. Ordinary Corrupt is an album of incredibly intense music that makes me feel relaxed. This is an album of incredibly relaxing music that feels really intense.
Yeah, it's just me coming off my kind of bias of, you know, that meme of the black metal being recorded through a Casio microphone and
a
headset. The production was always had always been pretty shite for, like, you know, Burnsum and doing stuff like that in the past, and I always just didn't like it, but this is I liked what these guys are doing, and it took a while to grow into it.
Well, good. I'm glad you did. Yeah, because I think, although it's definitely like more that kind of Casio mic or whatever, but the Ruins of Beverast album from earlier on this year is excellent. That's much more like traditional kind of black metal, but, you know,
I struggle to see the intent sometimes with black metal vocalings. I don't know.
I'm much more of I don't go in for like true cult black metal. I prefer that kind of Alcest Mole. Yeah. This.
I always think, like, why are there lyrics?
Yeah.
Why do you place lyrics instead of just kind of hitting the blah 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 and kind of ad-libbing whatever?
I'm not much of a lyrics guy. I'm always like,
you could
cool.
ad-lib really good black metal vocals and no one would be the wiser.
Well, actually, I think they're called Ghost Bath. There's a band called Ghost Bath, and their whole thing is that, well, you can't hear what the lyrics are in black metal, so that they literally just, it's nonsense. They don't even try. Like, their lyrics are just like,
how far can you go with it?
And you know they proudly shriek incomprehensibly, but
okay.
But George Clark has a much more much better approach, I think.
Yeah.
And that's Infinite Granite by Deaf Heaven. As you can plainly tell, I think it's pretty special.
It is very vivid. A lot of moving parts, always going right.
Yes. That's the thing. Take your time with it. Like, I think it's one of those ones. I think there's immediate moments. Mm. I think Shellstar, Great Mass of Color, The Gnashing.
Even Lament for Wasps, right?
That one took a while for me, but like Lament for Wasps and Other Language took until just before I arrived here for me to go woo and for them to click.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the other songs, to me, they were more like, okay, I get what this is going for.
Yeah, but Villain was where the album really clicked for me throughout, and then the rest. So it's the second half I kind of prefer a bit more.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think the second half is the one that takes longer to get into, but I agree, it's super very strong.
And the black and the final bit, Mombasa.
Come on.
It's so good.
It's so good. Yeah. It really is. Yeah. They're like, it's almost like they said, like, just to remind you that we can still do it.
And they absolutely blow it through the roof.
They do. It ends on a fucking gigantic. It's a very different ending to the end of not Night People, Worthless Animal, which is the end of Corrupt, Ordinary Corrupt. But it's like, that's just a sing-along
the opposite,
ending. Whereas Mombasa is a mass murder.
Scream along.
Scream along, like, carnage ending, but it works so well.
Yeah.
It's not quite up there. I think Wordless Animal is one of my favorite album closers of all time. But I think this is just perfect. This is what ends the album perfectly.
This is what it needed.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I'm giving this an 8, actually.
Nice. Yeah, all right.
For what it is.
For what it is. I'm so glad to hear that, man.
Other languages, my fave.
Other languages, your
beautiful
favorite.
Stuff.
Yes, definitely. I think I'm going to give my fave to Great Mass of Colour. That's where I am right now.
Nice. To be fair, I skip that song sometimes.
Wow!
It's almost like it's too good. Like, it's just too absolutely... Like, you hear it once and it's a brainworm of a song. Yeah. So, like, you know what it's going to sound like.
Yeah.
And no matter how good it is, you've heard it. Yeah. Like I can't surprise myself with that for the first time anymore.
Oh,
that's that feeling.
It always holds surprises for me. It's a 10. It's a 10 for me. I can't lie.
I can understand.
Yeah.
I can understand.
This is.
I'm not calling you out for that.
I appreciate that. Yeah. This is in a straight knife fight with Soda Blonde right now for me. So let's see how the rest of the year pans out.
Soda Blonde has it above.
All right. No, that's
I gave that 10. All good. So, like, go figure.
That's a beautiful record too. But I just think this is absolutely stunning. The album is called Infinite Granite, and it is the fifth album by Def Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
All one word. Okay, Dylan, I totally stonewalled you there and took the first album, so by all means, I'll give you Dita's choice on the next one.
Well, let's talk about the other biggest one. I mean, they're all big, to be fair. I could choose any. By metric of viewership, Halsey is the clash of the... fandoms, I guess.
Yeah, the clash of the fandoms. Right. Yes, yeah.
I'm sure you know why by now.
I do. Ashley Nicolette Frangipane is the...
She's a great name.
Full name of Halsey.
Halsey, yes. Halsey works. We'll go with Halsey.
Halsey works. Do you know where the name came from? The origin of the monarchy?
No.
That's okay.
I follow this artist, so this is...
No, me either.
I follow the other accompanying...
Yes.
Music.
If you didn't know now, by now it's Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross are
essentially Nine Inch Nails in this, essentially I'll add the studio version.
Yep.
Nine Inch Nails.
Yep. The current version of Nine Inch Nails are the. I'm just going to go ahead
and say
producers
setup.
And primary songwriters.
As opposed to live setup, because we know the Robin Thicke and the Joffreys and all that. They're great for live, but we've been in a pandemic. We haven't seen them yet for a while.
We haven't. No. And this is the creative engine of Nine Inch Nails.
Boy, do they look the same nowadays?
Yeah.
The interview that's on YouTube now of Halsey with them in the studio, just beside each other, they both put the same haircut,
okay,
the same kind of facial kind of look going on. It's okay, very funny. But
if
they're becoming each other, the more they're in. I mean, like, Atticus has only kind of been in the Nine Inch Nails.
Orbit 15 years now. That's a long time.
Atticus? I think Atticus has been less, right?
Well, he was definitely he was involved in the...
It's been
Nine Inch Nails specifically?
It's been this decade. Past the slip, I think, recently, during the movies.
He was definitely involved in the Social Network soundtrack.
Yeah, and then afterwards, he kind of joined in with Nin. I think it was after the last...
2016. No, you're absolutely right. Sorry, but they've been collaborating for a long time.
Natural.
Well, yeah. The album, by the way, and before I forget to say it, is called If I Can't Have Love, I Want Power. So this is basically...
I was apprehensive on this.
I would like... Me too. I would like for you to give your 2 cents on this first. And maybe...
What kind of 2 cents?
Well, I just want to know... So you hadn't heard Halsey at all before this?
I'm sure I have.
She's,
that's the thing, right? Like, you go into her playlist and it's like... Oh,
it's like a billion...
Her closer has...
800 million...
2 billion hits?
2 billion, yeah. Now, I will say, I hadn't... I actually don't think I'd heard any of these songs, but they are...
I think I have.
Mega, mega, mega hits.
I'm sure I have. Huge, but I don't listen to the radio, so...
Huge artist. I don't listen to radio either. I do get stuff... get through stuff through osmosis, but I don't think I was familiar with Halsey.
She's done stuff with people we like kind of Youngblood and a few other artists. Sort of, familiars.
Yeah.
Or Chainsmokers and stuff, you know, that world.
Yeah.
Kelly, yeah, it's all there.
That's fine. You go into this, and obviously, like, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, as recently as last year, were involved in, you know, Ghost 5, which was one of my favorite albums of the year. You know, Ghost 6 was super unsettling, but it's an amazing record, we know this. I think we both quite liked, I didn't love Bad Witch, but I think I liked
I liked a few songs.
Ad Violence.
It's a mixed bag since the last album. But you know, keeping on.
Soul soundtrack, Oscar, you know, and that's a great, I love the Soul soundtrack.
Fucking Watchmen soundtrack, holy Watchmen shit.
Soundtrack, excellent.
Like, keeping the momentum.
So these
really.
Are two artists, and there's been songs off those recent Nine Inch Nails projects, which I think are amazing. Like that song, What Are You Waiting For? That song, amazing, right? So I think they're on pretty good form at the moment. So it's a very interesting thing to say, okay, so we've got this artist, Halsey, who's mega star. What would it sound like for a huge pop star to collaborate with these two kind of, I guess, kind of underground heroes who have basically become mainstream successes.
Her chance to fangirl over her rivals, right?
Because,
as much as he's being a pop star, you know, not all pop stars listen to pop at home, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. No, exactly. Everybody, very often, I mean, I think it's funny, a Conjurer, like, they listen to, like, Carly Rae Jepsen and stuff. And it's probably, exactly. I don't know if Carly Rae Jepsen listens to Conjurer, but, you know, I think often artists have very wildly different tastes to what they actually make.
Your Lady Gaga being grown on Iron Maiden.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. Yeah, for sure. So what I would have hoped for listening to this is, like, a kind of Clash of the Titans where we've got, like, a little bit of that flavor of kind of Nine Inch Nails and, like, Atticus Reznor and Ross clashing with a really strong identity of, you know, kind of a modern pop star. I think somebody with a really strong identity we've talked about recently, like, you know, say Poppy or Grimes, or even like someone like Rina Sawayama, who I'm less fond of, but is great, or Neon Bunny or somebody like that. But so where do you, what did you get out of this, or how did you find it, given what you were expecting and then what you got?
What I got?
What did you get?
I got a lot more than what I expected.
Okay.
I expected kind of a bit more of a collision.
Yeah,
being more of a Vine collision. I'm sure they eased that out during the process, because she came to them obviously through her management.
And it's not obvious because, I mean, by numbers she's bigger than them.
I believe they're like, their first impression was, I enjoy the message. I see your message and it's extremely important. Like her lyricism, like first and foremost, that's kind of the intent of this project you're doing,
right?
About your crossover with uncertainty of giving birth, stuff like that.
That's right.
Considering she's had troubles in the past with and all that, and you know, the autonomy that comes with the whole process can be jarring, and like you think about that emotional, just discordant journey, and you think, wow, Trent does that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So it's a match made in heaven. I guess they were like, we can help you with this. So obviously, we just give it some more time, and sure enough, they kind of like tore, like, I guess they tore her stems almost to the skeleton, just the vocal track, and they were like, here's what we can do, and it's basically all their music, and then her vocals.
Yeah.
So that's how they made it work, and I guess that's a bit like pulling teeth, I would say, to get this to work, because it's such a, like, I listened back to her music beforehand and it sounds nothing like this.
No.
Even the vocal, the way she does her vocals, there's some moments that kind of have a musicality, but most of it is scientifically pop.
Yep.
And there's just something to be said for being proficient at pop.
Yeah.
Most pop artists are geniuses, and she's probably that. She's great at that craft.
Yeah.
And to escape to this genre is extremely like remarkable to see happen, if not to pull it off halfway decent. And I think this goes a bit above that. And it sounds like it works.
Okay.
Songs don't.
Oh,
no,
okay.
One song doesn't.
Which is?
The middle one.
The acoustic-y one.
For the first one on the B-side.
That
sounds fine, but it doesn't sound like the project.
No.
For me, at least.
No. I think also we've got much better examples of picked acoustic guitar in this week's lineup, to be honest, than that. It sounds a little MIDI for some reason, which I was a bit surprised by, but it actually sounds like it could be MIDI. But here's the thing. Ross and Reznor are on good form, and this is probably their most immediate.
Since
catchy.
It's been a long while. Since like, With Teeth.
Since
or
With
year,
Teeth.
Year Zero, or maybe The Slip even.
Or maybe, yeah, but certainly since with Teeth. But the problem for me is that I think for this to really work, there needs to be, I just feel like Halsey is just getting totally lost and in what are tropes of Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Almost from the very get-go, he's got an extremely distinctive piano style. Mm. We've all know.
Oh, yeah.
We talk, when people copy it, we immediately go, oh, that sounds like Trent Reznor. And when Trent Reznor does it, it almost has to be a little bit unusual for me still to get a kick out of it, like it was with Ghost 5 or whatever. Whereas here, it's almost like, it's sort of very kind of default Reznor.
It's very good serviceable at points. I mean, I see that, but I'm like, I it works.
And it works. I think it works
absolutely
sometimes.
It works to its detriment. I mean, it doesn't push the boundaries of what Trent can do.
No.
But I think it works as Halsey being like, can you give me a Nin track? Can you make this a Nin thing?
Mm.
And I think that works pretty
but
well.
But if she had more of a... Like, I think what she, the problem is that I don't think her identity is strong enough to shine through.
I think it kind of is.
I think on this album she sounds variously like Grimes.
I think it's growing here. This is the point. This is the starting album for her.
Halsey's identity? I'm sorry to be so combative, but how could this be Halsey's identity when it really genuinely just sounds like...
Well, it's
like,
her story.
Like what you said.
It's absolutely her
lyrically,
story.
Lyrically, fine. Totally get that. But this really just sounds like the new...
I think she's got a much better voice than Swift.
It sounds almost indistinguishable on a couple of tracks there towards the end. I mean, there's like... Darling, the acoustic one, but there's another one as well. I think on Honey, she sounds just like Grimes. I wish there was a bit more of a like a Gaga style personality in the voice. It's very heavily auto-tuned, very heavily pitch corrected for the most part, which strips it of a little bit of identity. She's kind of doing like a southern type accent on a couple of the tracks.
I mean, that's her.
That's fine.
That's just her accent.
That's fine.
Don't take that away.
But the problem with it is, and here's my thing, right? If there was a bit more of her in this, and I haven't heard, like, if you listen to her top 10, it's just like a smorgasbord. It doesn't have any consistency to it. If there was more of her in this, I know it is lyrically fine, but musically.
I think take the vocals out of this,
with the exceptions of a few tracks, and I will grant you that. I think Lilith, I'm like, okay.
As far as what goes.
That's got... I mean, as far as having a musical identity.
Yeah, I think Girl Is a Gun is totally there too.
I totally agree with you on that one. I think Girl Is a Gun has something that I don't hear.
The Lighthouse is just lush. It's my favorite kind of like...
Doomstoner.
It reminds me of like Type O.
Yeah.
A bit. It's got this sultry kind of sound to it.
Yeah.
It's very
Honey
cool.
Has a little bit of that like that, Willow think, style pop punk revival.
But yeah, I think The Lighthouse is where her vocals really kind of take a nice groove. She's got,
yeah, I suppose that's fair.
You can hear it right there.
Yeah. The Lighthouse doesn't work for me musically, but I agree it isn't a typical 9 and 10. But I think you know, like The Tradition, Bells in Santa Fe, Easier Than Lying, Lilith honestly sounds a little bit like Closer. It has that kind of porn swagger to it.
You mean I'm Not a Woman, Not a God, I'm a God. That's more Closer. That's got the...
Well, but Girl Is Gone has like the kind of the kind of porny groove to it. Whereas Woman, I'm not a Woman,
I think
I'm God.
Girl Is a Gun kind of sounds almost a social networking points.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's absolutely
busyness that Atticus brings.
But Woman, Oh My God has the social network that boom, 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 that kind of descending thing, which
is all over the social network. That is a Closer. That happens in Closer.
But that's what I'm saying. This album is making me feel like we talk about.
I love that
every week, right? Nearly every week. Something happens on the show and we go, oh, that's a little Nine Inch Nails.
And this is totally that.
That's a little Reznor Ross.
This is comfort food, Nin, and I don't mind it for this purpose.
That's fine. Totally fine. But I get that. But this album has bizarrely made me wonder whether or not Trent Reznor is kind of a one-trick pony. Because I'm listening to it going like, this I just sounds say like so this
have you heard like, what he did the last decade?
This, but that's, I would have never said that before listening to this, but now, this sounds like an AI doing Nine Inch Nails with like an AI kind of like generic kind of cookie cutter. And again, you know, listen, I'm sure the concept, I haven't seen the movie, there's a movie,
it looks good,
I'm sure it's great, and you know, and I don't doubt the sincerity of the lyrics and all that kind of stuff, but like, you know, just from a musical perspective, it kind of sounds like algorithmically generated Nine Inch Nails-esque, Grimes-esque music.
And you don't like that?
Sounds
like I love what that
it's a
sounds
some
like.
Of the songs are bangers, like I'm Not a Woman I Got is a banger.
Easier Than Lying is a really fucking good
Honey's
song.
A great song.
The way Easier Than Lying just goes through the roof at the end, just absolute 11.
Easier Than Lying is good, but and I can say that, like, you know, in the moment,
but
I know
what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to review this like in a way of not just enjoying a song in the moment, but it's almost giving me this uncanny. It's like watching the Polar Express. I'm getting this like uncanny valley feeling while I'm listening to it.
I think Trent may have an issue with bringing a new version of himself to a production collaboration.
Yeah,
this happened with Niggy Tardust, that album which was Saul Williams. That he did that in 2006.
Yeah.
That kind of like coincided with Teeth, so they share some actual songs together.
Yeah.
And some of that had like
the
feeling as well. But this kind of goes for the Trent and Atticus combo.
Yeah.
Of familiarities, which I'm fine with.
Which is great. No, like that's it. You know, it's just
tradition sounds good. That's probably one of my favorite vocal bits.
But then I'm wondering, like, I mean, and that's great, and I think I almost feel like all the reviews, because this is getting great reviews, so like I'm the bad guy here, like but the reviews are like, this is like breaking new ground and it's a great new sound for Halsey, and I'm like,
it's not, I'm like, for her it's breaking ground.
I'm like, is it a great new sound for her? Because like that's, it's sort of like pick a super distinctive band who aren't like, obviously you aren't Nine Inch Nails, but you know, like, just, it's literally like, pick up the singer and put their vocal tracks on a very like of that ilk. It'd be like having a Korn album.
That's kind of what you get
with Lady Gaga singing. And you're like, it's a bold new sound for Lady Gaga. It's like, well, yeah, I suppose, but she would never be able to do this without like Korn. Do you know that kind of way? It's a collaboration. So this should really be.
This kind of way, yeah.
Bad thing to say, and I hate when we do this in other contexts. But I think in this case, is it true they took her set of vocal stems? Is that true? Or is that just what you're assuming?
I think like, in the exercise of trying to get to the point of her vocals.
Okay.
I don't know if that's entirely.
Yeah, okay. No, fair enough.
Bits and pieces, you know.
But it does sound like Nine Inch Nails featuring Halsey, I gotta say. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I don't really understand what this does for her career. When Poppy did it, when she was
say,
like,
I would say,
totally different sound.
It's not too different to that
on her own terms. Do you know that kind of way? It doesn't sound like any one particular. I mean, it sounds a little bit like Baby Metal in theory, but it's not. You know, it doesn't sound like Baby Metal. It's just like a similar approach, but it sounded like her.
Mm.
And this just sounds like she's singing over Nine Inch Nails backing tracks.
Sort of. Bits and pieces, like
it's, and like I said, I enjoy some.
It changes
of the songs.
Up and gets weird, and even there's some stuff like Lilith and all. Yeah,
that. No, yeah,
I'm like,
are,
that sounds
almost
like Beba Doobie.
Yeah,
they're like instruments of Beba Doobie, kind of that.
And like you asked for this, kind of starts off like Modern Failure. Honestly, I think that's really cool. The reason that song doesn't work for me is I don't, for some reason, on an album that's produced incredibly well. That song,
it is a little,
it's like super far back in the mix.
It's a little bit different from the others.
Yeah,
even on the vinyl, I noticed that on the vinyl. But it does open up. I like the way I like the reverb in the vocals as far as it goes.
Yeah.
It just sounds a bit more. It has the grimy effect with the vocals.
Yeah, definitely.
Same with Honey as well, right?
Well, Honey definitely very, very Art Angels. I mean, yeah, that sounds like it could have
favorite,
been
favorite Grimes album. I'll take it.
Yeah, no, it's great. I still don't know if you played me something, I would ever go, oh, this sounds a bit like Halsey. Yeah. Do you know that kind of way?
Because
I can't get a handle on what Halsey actually sounds like. Because even her voice from song to song sounds a little. We've said all the names already, but you know, it sounds a little bit like other people.
I found her voice. I enjoy it in this context. I don't enjoy it too much in the
Their original stuff. Material.
Yeah. So that this is me fighting to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And hell, I bought the vinyl, so
you did. I hope you enjoy it. No. And that's it's all good. I just think you have to sort of put your like. I mean, in my head, I had to put this like kind of grump hat on and just be like, I have to be a bit of a grump about this because I don't mean to be, because I was like when you were like. Let's not do The Man I Trust. So I was like, Dylan.
I love that album.
Because I would have come in and been like,
I love that. This album is a wonderful
time. Whereas now I have to be like, I enjoy listening to it, but in theater, but like actually on an artistic side.
I think we wouldn't have had a conversation with Man I Trust. We would be like, yeah, we like it.
We would have both been like,
this we is love really it. Good. It's chill.
Yeah,
it's non-confrontational.
Oh, so non-confrontational.
But this,
it's confrontational.
Yeah. I mean. God, I love her mission statement with it. With this, it looked lots of gusto to get this kind of thing out.
Yeah.
Fucking what? Let you do a film and do a film with live performances in it within a month while being heavily pregnant. That's kind of a big fuck you to people. Like, what's your excuse?
More power to her.
During the pandemic.
During a panini.
Running through the forest in a horror movie. I don't know others who could do that.
Neither.
I just like the collaborative effort. I think it works. I would love to see, like, here's a Nine Inch Nails album. Here's Trent singing on it. But here's Halsey as well. Here's a female vocal.
There you go.
I'd love see, to,
that's kind of more what I would have hoped for from this. Yeah. Do you know, like,
I can hear the vocals working well together.
Yeah, I could hear that. I could hear their vocals working well together. Yeah. I could. You know, but it's like, there were actually lines on the album where I was like, no, this actually sounds like it would be better if Trent did this line. You know,
I don't think Trent would sing something like The Tradition kind of style.
No.
I think that's absolutely her.
No, and
very Amanda, very Amanda Palmer from the last album.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Because it's very piano laden.
There are little hip hoppy moments as well, which are good. You know, it's just.
Oh, that's true. There are some real good stuff.
Yeah.
What was it? Lilith is the one.
Yeah.
That's a really good song. You gotta give it there.
Yeah.
And The Lighthouse, I like that kind of style from her.
Yeah, The Lighthouse doesn't do it for me. I find that riff a bit farty, I'll be honest.
But
it's okay.
It's just kind of a doom riff. It's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's fine. You know,
Trent is a fucking good bassist, man.
And then that last track I quite find a bit syrupy. It's quite.
Yeah, the last song's alright.
Saccharine.
Sounds like. It does sound like a Nine Inch Nails song. The last song in Year Zero. It's there.
I just find it so funny people online being like, I just don't really see the connection between this and Nine Inch Nails.
Is that the Halsey fan?
Have you not ears? Maybe.
Yeah. Imagine, that makes sense,
yeah,
right?
Maybe. And listen, I
Nine Inch Nails fan are like, yay, more Nine Inch Nails.
And
we like this Halsey. It works.
Yeah.
It just works. I don't see any complaints, so I'm all right. Besides from me. it's not offensive. Right? It's not like, wow, this just doesn't gel. The fact is, this does gel.
I don't know if it does sometimes.
It does.
All right. I know.
It's quite seamless, actually.
I'm so glad that you think so.
Yes. Because it is.
Yeah, I think at points it is.
Struggle.
It's just for me, a bit
of an identity crisis. I can see why. You know, it's a quickly done together thing, and it's very focused and it's very like lightning in the bottle moment. And Trent, of course, I'd imagine he, you know, you're in service of someone, so you're gonna give them the stuff they might like.
But he knows. That's what I'm saying. Trent Reznor knows when he's doing a very Trent Reznor piano line.
Even Trent and Atticus apparently were quite shy about like, is this too much? Like at the end of Easier Than Lying, like. Is it too mad at the end? It's like, no, this is exactly what. So it's nice to see that.
Yeah.
Like that kind of approval going on. Because I guess for them, for Halsey, Trent is to Halsey what Bowie was to Trent.
Yeah.
During the period when they were collaborating.
Yeah.
In the late 90s.
Yeah.
And Trent was kind of a lost soul, kind of like Halsey had gone through.
Yeah.
And that's a kind of that's a nice aspect of this collaboration that doesn't seem entirely phoned in.
Yeah, I hope there is soul I do hope that this introduces. I mean, listen, you know, as I say, we're talking about an artist who has like multiple billions of streams on her songs. So, like, I do hope that this introduces a new group or a new generation of people to at least a sound. You know, like a different sound that they're not used to.
I'm sure they'll be like, "Oh, these are the guys from the films."
Lead them down.
This is a Social
holes.
Network, dude.
Yeah.
Not as opposed to like, this guy did Closer and had like a hole.
Well, yes. Well, quite. And I'm not even the world's biggest Nine Inch Nails fan. Like, I wouldn't have an encyclopedic knowledge of them, but you know, they're there. Like, it's a sound that's just defines sort of industrial rock. So you know, and more recently, sort of ambient, creepy electronics. So yeah, you know, yeah, an interesting collaboration. But as I say, for me, I just
I'm sure you were pleased going like, yay, more Trent.
I wished I was.
I am so pleased when I hear a mainstream Trent.
Yeah,
and this is as close as we get. Right?
I usually am.
I mean, that's just it. Like next Nin album probably won't be mainstream Nin sounding.
Probably won't.
I mean,
but that's but so look, I he can like, do I've it. Heard this.
We've,
you know,
we've heard it in the singles. Like, you know, those EPs that came out. There was always like one song that was pop Nin, and I don't know. It's a bit of a struggle.
Yeah.
Hesitation Marks was the last true Nin album. That was 8 years ago.
8 years ago, long time figure. Ago. Yeah.
And even that didn't have actual live drums on it. So go figure.
Like I say, you know, I don't know what it is, but to me, it's a bit too kind of, as I say, it's a bit algorithmic.
Saccharine,
but just the sort of the elements are a bit too algorithmically generated to my ear.
Okay.
You know, I want to hear Atticus or Trent and Atticus both being a bit more aware of what their tropes are.
That's true. I'm sure they are.
And I think on the Watchmen soundtrack they wear, I think on Ghost they wear, where you can go, it takes you a few minutes to go, is this? Oh, fuck. Mm-hmm. This is. As opposed to battering you over the head immediately with, here are all of the things that sound like Nine Inch Nails.
You know, I see the tropes. Yeah. Like the tremolo on the second fret, up to the 14th fret, and then down to the 5th. Like that modal thing. I detect it instantly.
And the guitar, the piano chords that are like, doom, doom, doom.
But I'm like, you know, those Trent, just press the Nin button again. I'm fine with it.
Push it. Yeah.
Like, no complaints.
The hand going down on the nut button.
I'm slightly like, oh, come on. But then again, I'm like, this is a cool combo.
Hey,
this is a first, or not a first, but
absolutely. I'm not here to poop your party.
And
just
I hope Halsey carries this without Nin in her career and learns from it.
Well, that's the thing. I still be very anxious and eager.
And her
to
fans
hear,
are liking it.
Yeah, her something fans. That like where she takes a bit like what like how cultured I am talking about Sparks, but what Sparks did after they did Number One in Heaven, whereas like they worked with Giorgio Moroder and it was very much like he kind of helped them craft the sound of like the synthesizer, as Giorgio would say. But then they on the next album, which the name of which I can't remember, they basically brought that sound, you know, without him, but they brought that and into more into their own realm and wrote what is like their favorite song of mine, which I cannot remember the name of right now, When I'm With You, which is an amazing song. So you know, so go watch that movie, by the way. Sparks Brothers is amazing.
Watch this movie as well.
Yeah, watch the movie. But so some sort of evolution like that of kind of like crafting a new sound, but then moving away from the very distinctive person that helped you craft it and doing your own version of it. That would be cool. But
yeah.
What's your favorite song?
Favorite song is a lot of them really hit me at different moments. Like Lilith has that early Gorillaz era saunter to it. Like, you know the one.
Yeah, I can.
It's early 2000s stuff. The Lighthouse, dude.
Yeah, I'll take I'm Not a Woman, I'm a God.
That's fucking good as well. That's a stomper.
It is a banger. Yeah, it is a banger. Score to 10?
I think it's 8.
All right.
Best 8 this year for me.
Okay.
It grows.
Yeah.
Some of the songs are tens, to be honest. Like, just absolute like filtered, exactly what you want from distilled Trent sound, right? Yeah. And it's good to see him do like live band sounding stuff, not just drum machine stuff. Great. What was your favorite song?
Not a Woman.
Yeah.
You're gonna hate me. I think it's a 5 for me.
Okay, good. It's not a 4.
No, I think it's
because it's not poor.
No, it's not
fucking poor by any stretch.
Not, like that's
you
that's,
weird fuck.
That's me acknowledging that probably on paper it's good. It just
and,
it exists in that
majority rules. It's good. So Yeah.
Majority rules.
You're the black
but
sheep.
But if I were on Metacritic, it would still be the lowest score on Metacritic. I think currently it's 60, so give it a 50 for me. But yeah, you know, I can tell it's not
the only
it's
bad,
not bad.
The
it's
only
just,
bad reviews I've seen are douchey reviews, and yours is not a douchey
review. I'm not trying to be a douche.
You
I'm,
still like this, but...
I like this, but... like yeah.
Some reviewers, I'm not going to name who, but... you know, they kind of just have a bias towards not this happening
yeah.
as a mix.
I'm not trying to be dude bro about it. I just think, like, I would just love to... I actually would love to hear more of her own personality in it. That's all I'd say. So, that's... I can't remember the name of it now. If I Can't Have Love, I Want Power.
Yeah.
By Halsey.
I love the album cover. I'm a little iffy about the way they had to censor it.
Oh... it's pretty, like, as far as censorship goes, it's...
Oh, yeah, it's not offensive, but...
It's less clumsy than I
could have
been.
But I'm like, come on, it's just a nip.
Yeah, I know.
Just one nip. Not even the...
Please, Dylan, we live in a very puritanical society. You can't have your baps out on an album cover.
Fuck's sake.
Or one single bap.
Yeah.
So that's Halsey.
Where do we want to go next?
I think it's got to be...
That's a fun...
Break down, break up. You see that? I'm gonna sync that with the song.
Yeah. Try, I dare you.
Too mellow and too sounds... Too mellow.
Too mellow. I don't know. Whatever you want to call it.
Definitely too mellow.
Mr. Mellow.
Mr. Mellow. Sounds of Tokyoto Future. Matthew Hopkins' sequel album to Memories of Tokyoto. The 2018 sort of Jet Set Radio... tribute album.
Yeah, and this
inspired,
is kind of,
yeah.
And this is loosely inspired by the sequel of that game.
Oh.
Jet Set Radio Future, which was sadly got no ports, but that was on the PS2.
Oh,
that was on the
PS2.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nothing else. Or Xbox. It was on something, but I missed that button and never got to play that game, so I lose out on the bit of context. But he said on Twitter that this was just loosely kind of inspired by Jet Set.
I think he, yeah, I
and more so his own music,
yeah,
coming into the feel of Jet Set finally, whereas the first album was not that. So that's where we are with this.
Yeah, and you're talking. I mean, I've literally never played a single second of Jet Set Radio.
But you've seen the visuals.
I've seen like screen grabs. I know it's about rollerblading.
We'll
and
play
graffiti.
It someday. We'll play it someday.
That's fine. But you know, but I think what we did Sounds of Memories of Tokyo.
It doesn't take that long to get the thesis of what Jet Set Radio
no,
is.
I, yeah, I get it.
Like spray can, rollerblades, yeah. Is music.
Tag walls, punch fascists.
Yeah, it's just crazy hair and SWAT teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
for
what
sure.
It's all about.
But I think we spoke about the first album on a Time Machine a little while ago, maybe a year ago.
Yeah.
About that. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. It's a mm-hmm. sprawling album. It's not all great, but I think the stuff that's on it that's good is really, really good, and it had a very distinctive sound, you know, all the way through. I think I listened to a couple of interviews with him. I think this one seems to be more so him drawing from similar pool of inspiration, but wanting to sort of push the boundaries, make it a bit darker, make it a bit more like on a genre side, make it a bit more broad. And I think he's largely achieved that.
Yeah, it's wilder. It's much wilder.
It is.
If not, it's not heavier.
No.
In the sense that,
like,
there's some
not
songs I'm like, okay, it's different. It goes for a different kind of heavy.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, whether it be like fast breakneck blast or backbeating.
Yeah. Like, there's nothing as heavy as Big Beast.
Yes.
On this, but I think he is really, like, leveled up the production, and it actually sounds phenomenal.
It really does.
And he's also gotten in, you know, like live sax on that first track.
Live sax, some trumpet as well.
There's trumpet there to varying degrees of success.
In rave shit, I'd say success.
Rave shit is good. That was the first single.
Yeah.
I find the brass loop on that track, that one, weirdly, the album takes a while to get going for me. I think it starts that break down, break up, which is a great song.
It feels very Hideki Naganuma, which was the original guy who did the soundtrack. It feels very much like kind of a variety mix.
Definitely. It's a good way to set up the album. It's got the breakbeat, it's got the guitar, it's got, you know, kind of like chopped up vocal samples and stuff like that. It's good.
It's in line kooky with the inspiration.
But I think like... you know, I think Life on the Line continues it very well. It's got that, I think it's right on time. Was that a sample when Skrillex used it, or is that a Skrillex sample? Right on time, because that was a off bang around with Skrillex.
That. It could be before Skrillex.
I noticed he's actually very subtle with his samples. There's
an amazing cameo in this album. Wooly Madden, streamer Wooly Versus, he's in this.
Oh, okay.
He said recently, like before he went on his month long honeymoon, is like, I'll give you guys 4 weeks to try and find me and my sample in this album. Okay. So some guy in this album, there's some voice line or something, or reason. I haven't found it yet. So
the
must be deep.
The first track of Memories of Tokyoto, Pump Up the Love, has, I only noticed this, or went back to it, but I've gotten really into Here Comes the Hot Stepper by Indie Kamosi.
Yes.
And that song has that murderer, and like that sample in it, which I was like, no way. It's just funny the things you hear. So there's loads of great samples of this. So I don't know how many of them are like commercial samples. I know there's a whole song which is easily my least favorite song on the album, which is Sound Effects Record number 27.
Of course it is, because you don't like ska.
Exactly.
And I love ska.
Yeah.
To an extent.
But that song is kind of about, you know, vocal samples and like buying royalty free packs of sounds and things like that.
Yeah, it sounds very much straight out of the games.
Oh, really? The ska in the games?
Oh, there's tons of weird shit in the games, dude.
Yeah.
The game soundtracks are more wilder than these. I think Tomello really brings the focus and the song.
Mm, yeah.
Moments and bits.
Yeah.
Like the song sensibilities, right? Kind of missing in the soundtracks. Really. Yeah. Soundtracks are more kind of like keeping the beat and stuff, and
yeah,
more like rave.
And there are other, like, I do actually think that rave shit has a bit of that. Like, it sort of sounds a bit soundtracky rather than an actual song. And Dance With You Long, so I think it's a bit of a non-event, kind of this kind of Justin Timberlake acoustic guitar. But then you kind of,
it's a really good guitar.
Yeah.
Kind of Spanishy, kind of.
Yeah, it's fine.
Nice. There's a bit of that, a lot of that in this.
There is. But I do think that it really hits its stride once you get to Noise the Invasion,
which is like Invader Must Die Prodigy.
Kind of
that buzzed synth.
He actually dedicated the album to Keith Flint.
Hell yeah.
So yeah,
I would.
Yeah. So yeah, but that, like that, the buzzy, scratchy bass synth is just so satisfying. That one has a bit of a vibe of Pendulum, and then it kind of cuts into this electro swing Power of Stellar thing. I was like, yes, fantastic. It kicks like a mule when it actually gets going. It's so good. And then you get
this kind of,
oh yeah.
Well, Noise Invasion kind of has this very chill synth that comes in through it, right? Just cuts right through and adds a huge, just expanse to it, and I love that.
I think you're on a really good run there, because like Molotov Music, great kind of lo-fi drum and bass.
It is.
Theremin, kind of groovy, it's great. Love to Love, it has this Strawberry Girls meets Gorillaz part to it. Do you notice that with the guitar? Yeah. It's very Strawberry Girls.
And he kind,
kind of breaks and scratches. And it's like kind of Spooky Steve kind of thing, yeah.
Kind of breaks and scratches that up, and it sounds nice. It sounds very oddly catchy. Just fun. It, like, brings me back to that fun vibe.
It's very good. It's really, really good. I've already said I don't love Sound Effects Record number 27.
But I love how it layers.
Yeah.
I think he's got the layering down to a science, and pretty cool rap at the end.
His rapping throughout is actually super. He's gotten better.
It's better, but there's not as much.
No.
But I think the variety's changed up a bit.
But I think his verse on
where is it at?
What is it? I think Poison Jam Part 2. His verse on that is the one where he's like AC/DC greatest hits CD or whatever, that line. That's such a good part. He really does come into his own on that.
Yeah, Poison Jam is really cool.
Yeah, Poison Jam is great.
Encapsulates the gang under the bridge in the sewers style quite well.
I just want to do dope shit with my friends. But then that harp that comes in reminded me of Bibio. It's got a very much a sort of scratchy vintage tape.
Home improv style.
Home improv feel to it, yeah.
Rapid Cruise, really cool. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah, Rapid Crew.
It's got a weird end.
It
sounds like one of the characters from the game.
Mm.
One of the many waifus of the game kind of having their bit. It's you know, Jet Set is a very dorky thing. It's a very dorky thing.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. So like, you got to expect
I just wish TVMA's delivery was a bit better, because I think there's bits of Reverse that are good.
There are bits, right? Mm-hmm.
But there are bits that I just that don't work for me.
Because the part right before is great.
The song, in fact, is
fucking insane. And his rap in it is amazing.
Really good, yeah.
With like the kind of more kind of flamenco, Spanish guitar.
Yeah, no, Rapper Cruz is really good.
Don't Stop Now, so it has like a 50s department store Muzak kind of thing going on, which is kind of fun. And
I think there's loads of great stuff. I could take or leave Chainsaw Funk.
I like a lot of that though, what Chainsaw Funk does. It reminds me of something.
Say something. Doesn't remind me that, but it's a great song.
Yeah.
Overall, I think it's, because I think it ends really strong. I think Pull Up and Future Unwritten are two brilliant songs.
Pull Up, fun lyrics. Just interesting.
Yeah, you
kind of done it before, but I like kind of the roof.
Yeah, Pull Up is great though, because it's like I think any sort of album where you've got like quite a sort of nerdy white guy rapping, you got to put your cards on the table in some way, and I kind of love that line where he's like, you might like come up to me just because I'm white and be like, these people, am I right? But like, fuck you, and I'm gonna punch you in the face. Like, it, you know, it's quite fun. It's I do like all of the smack, you know, smack, Count Smackula, like.
He's got a great voice.
What is it, Smackamari Damashi or whatever? Yeah, like all that stupid stuff. But it's good. It's a good song. I think it's a great song musically.
It's funny.
The stuff about slapping racists is like good. It's good wholesome stuff. And then Future Unwritten, like I said, once again, I think has a cool, hopeful kind of almost sort of uppermost late night drive kind of feel to it. Yeah, awesome.
It was. I Should Have Known and Chainsaw Funk kind of work with a. They have that kind of synth and vocoder stuff that Chromeo.
Oh, I was going to say TWRP, but yeah, Chromeo too.
More so Chromeo, actually.
Ooh, the pre-sale is up.
Yep. Yeah, that's. I'm not sure if he knows the Chromeo, but it's tied in there.
I think the talk box just sounds like the
between
talk
the
box.
Funk and the talk box. Yeah, combo, you can't go wrong.
You can't. I think this is really good. Now we're talking about it, and like every second song, I'm like, but no. I think the good. I don't think the bad stuff is bad. I just think it's not like
it's just weird.
Yeah, it's like weird.
Or that's the point.
like the harmonies that I Want to Know sounds like a Chipmunk Boys to Men, and I'm like, I don't really need that in my life.
That's a good call, actually.
But it's fine.
the run on the bass is great.
Yeah, like there's good bits. Did I already say this? But I think Love to Love sounds like modern Fall Out Boy. It doesn't sound like Patrick Stump, but when he like pitches his voice up that chipmunky kind of way.
Yeah, okay.
Listen to it again. But overall, I think this is great. Yeah. I mean, it's a vibe. It's definitely a vibe.
All these albums are a vibe, but whether it is better than the other album, give me 10 more listens.
Yeah, I'm looking at the other one.
Like, it's different. That's the best point of this whole album, is that it's different.
So much stuff.
It doesn't retread.
Like, when you... It's not often you can read through a track list, and I can literally go like, okay, here I go, that's that one. And then, like, if you wake up at the moment, say something. Like, they're very memorable songs. Yeah. Like, the old to the new to the old. You read through the song titles, and you're like, yeah, I know all of these.
But so are these.
But these are also...
It just takes a bit more time.
There's not as many of them that you kind of look at the song title and go, oh, yeah, that's that. You know, like, there are...
That's because a lot of these are less, like,
vocally.
His vocal
yeah.
going through it. Like, they are there, but they're more spliced and Prodigy-like.
There's no songs, like, there's actually no songs, like,
because like
Say
like,
Something, for example, where it's just, like, that's, like, a, Say Something is, like, a pop song, basically.
Like you kind of hear it, like, Rapid Crew and stuff. Like, it really goes for that, like, early Prodigy.
Yeah.
Era, like, the second album, where there wasn't really any vocals. It was just kind of, like, wild.
Yeah.
Like he's taking from a lot of cool stuff.
He is. It's making it his own.
I think this is definitely more his style than it is a tribute.
Now. I agree, totally agree. I think there's great. Nothing in the last album had loads of stuff like Jet Set Classic and like there's Downtown Tokyo Do blah 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 blah. All this kind of stuff like trying to make it seem like an alternate soundtrack. This just feels like it's a too mellow album.
Yeah.
It's got a particular aesthetic and vibe that...
The game was, you have the radio presenter in it, and this doesn't really have that. So it's,
No.
Yeah, it's good.
This is just breakbeat tunes.
Yeah, it's great. It doesn't really sound like Tokyo 2 Future either. Because that had a totally different style as well. I think it's just is its own beast, and that's the best thing I can take away from this.
I think he's an interesting artist, and he does all this stuff is nothing like this, really. I mean, he does
Later Alligator soundtrack. Yeah, that's a great game.
Oh, he did the soundtrack for Superliminal, did he?
No, he did a remix on it.
Oh, remix.
But Later Alligator was kind of jazzy.
Cool.
Old like 50s kind of 40s jazz.
He's done horror soundtracks as well, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Atmospheric horror music. So all sorts of stuff. You know, he's a versatile and creative guy. I think that should be celebrated. So.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is really good. I agree. It's not as distinctive as the other album, but I don't want to say it's worse. I think it sounds more mature and evolved.
And there's not much like this out there. There's like not so serious stuff that you can chill to and vibe to. You know, I wouldn't recommend you go around on roller skating and tagging
and slapping
tagging people. Tanks or
but
you know,
but I will say, you know, it is probably about 10 minutes too long, you know, I think it is. I think it might actually be the better of losing like two songs maybe.
But I just enjoy it all. I'm giving this a 9.
Okay,
and my favorite song is all of them. No, it's favorite song is Noise the Invasion.
Oh, Noise the Invasion is great. Yeah, Noise the Invasion is awesome. I think I will take, I'll give it an 8, and I think I'll take Poison Jam Part 2.
Yeah, the first Poison Jam was amazing.
Poison Jam
continues it.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, that was very good. It's called Sounds of Tokyo To Future by 2, the number 2, Mellow. Good stuff. All right, last album of the week, Into the Blue by The Joy from Middleport.
Yeah,
to say The Joy
from Middleport. You know what happens when The Joy from Middleport comes around,
Dylan?
I forget. Well, they're my favorite band when they come around. I'm sure you have somebody like that.
Oh yeah.
You know, you don't listen to them a lot, but when they come around, you listen to nothing but them. Like, kind of like Tool.
Yeah. I feel like Biffy are like that, you know. I do listen to a fair bit of Biffy, but you know,
when you turn on the album, it's like this is the best album.
But the hype train rolls into town, and there's always a story. You know, it's always gonna compare in some way to the previous material for you. And
to be fair, the only reason the hype train rolls out is because I listen to it too much.
Yeah.
So far, this hasn't left the station yet.
Okay.
And it's been multiple weeks.
Okay, that's good.
I've been 3 weeks with this album.
Okay. All right. So The Joy from Middle, Into the Blue, comes not too hot on the heels of Arth, which was the...
it's been a while, dude.
It's been a while. Yeah, I think that was 2018, maybe.
Yeah,
it was 2018. And I think you and I actually listened back to our review, and you and I both really liked that album. You actually gave it a 10,
yes,
I remind
you. Now I would give it probably less.
Okay.
Probably an
8. I gave it an 8, and I stand by that. I think it's a very strong
album. I think it had some production hiccups.
Yeah,
string wise, comparatively to the debut few albums.
I think the debut album.
I think they haven't captured as well as
the Big Roar.
I think the Hitch was kind of a nice home. Did you ever listen to the Hitch?
I'm sure I've listened to it, but
it had a nice kind of one shot and one take kind of feel to it.
Yeah,
amazing songs. But,
Definitely
the home improv styling.
Yeah,
and then this is kind of building upon what they started with, I guess.
Yeah,
and,
so we're back to
what they learned.
We're back to home production for sure on this one. This is self produced by Ritzy and Ridian.
God,
and
that's insane.
I don't know that it is. Let's talk about the songs first. I think the album kind of definitely the first moment where I was like, okay, we're cooking. Like we are in, we're good. This is Joy Formidable that I know from the Big Roar, for example, which I think has
that's for you. That's for you.
Like, what's the great, what's it called? The Whirling? What's that song called?
Whirring.
Whirring,
yeah,
that song is amazing.
A lot of diehard fans are like, I want the Whirring moment.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm like, starts off pretty booming.
Oh, this one?
Into the Blue.
Yeah, I just...
What for you really got
Into
it?
The Blue. No, Intervals, because I was like, oh yes! Yeah, like, it just...
I see that.
It has that kind of rumble to it, and it's kind of urgent, and the whammy pedal's going 90. I should say that's on Sevier, or Sevier, or what do you want to call it, that the third track, right? And then
that
in
blasts, that just
it just goes, and then Intervals has that kind of bouncy battles thing to it.
Yeah.
It's got hooks. It's like got this kind of Foals thing going on. It's great, you know. So I just think the first couple of tracks for me didn't do enough.
Into the Blue gets big. I love how that develops with bigness as it goes around.
Yeah,
like there's three layers of how expansive it gets.
Yeah,
when it comes to like just dynamics.
Yeah.
And you haven't hear the with the da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, you know, I
think it's big, and then the guitar kind of does the whirp thing.
But then it's so
it's very distorted, and
it's only, very distorted.
It's only three people.
Yeah, well, you couldn't physically play a lot of this. That's fine.
Live, sure live, there's a bit more.
Yeah,
sometimes.
I've seen. Have you seen them live?
Because
I have.
No, I've seen them once, okay. A very long time ago.
Okay, yeah, I saw them probably at one of their
during Arth, during the Arth tour.
Yeah, I saw them on the Arth tour. Yeah.
You're in the States, right?
That in was the States.
Yeah. So
I was going to say that might have been one of their last kind of run of gigs before
because
it was summer
Panini.
It was summer 2019. Anyway. But they were excellent, but you know, I think Into the Blue suffers from what I have to say is one of the things that I think here's the thing, one of the things I get on my soapbox this week, okay, one of the things I said in the review last time was I was like, I really like this, I was like, but I just would love to hear them work with somebody who produces them in a way that is a bit more present and clean and less kind of washed in reverb and sat back, and I think this album almost like completely ignored that, and a lot of the songs sound like they're happening in the next room.
No, not really. I think it works very nicely for the way Ritzy does her vocals,
which are
they're not super direct. She doesn't project a lot.
No.
She kind of a bit of a soothing voice to it.
Very low key kind of, on the vocal kind of, front.
Yeah, yeah, I really enjoy that. Good, like a dichotomy to what the guitars do and what the everything else does, which is huge and just big and bombastic.
And she's like the guitarist,
and it soars really nicely. And I think the choice of reverbs and delays, especially delays, actually, just go really nicely. It makes a really relaxing experience, even if everything is kind of dark and brash and big. Like, you can still kind of chill with it.
I think she's let her guitar do a lot of the talking on this album, because I don't think there's much in the way of vocal hooks in a way that previous albums
kind of is it depends on the song.
I think that
the singles kind of
it's a crossroads thing. That thing in Intervals is great, you know. There's definitely
Back to Nothing
Back to Nothing
is stunning.
Yeah, it's very anthemic.
Back to Nothing does a better job than what Into the Blue is shooting for.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. I think, you know, they do love kind of stepping back and doing these kind of like 2-minute instrumentals in the middle of songs.
They have fun.
Instrumental parts.
They have a lot of fun. Gotta Feed My Dog goes with that.
I do like that dum dum bum da dum ba bum dum. There's a real kind of like groove to that song.
It's
awesome.
A deceptively heavy song.
Yeah.
For what they do. Yeah. Farrago actually has this kind of a nice descending chorus to it. It's chill. It's a chill enough song. Yeah. Kind of slow to mid-tempo, but like, they really know what to blow up the choruses.
Yeah. I think Bring It to the Front is another moment where I'm like, that just sounds like the Joy Formidable, unmistakable. That kind of like bouncing, the synth and the guitar bouncing off of each other, mid-tempo. Like, it's really good. I think the vocals aren't quite where I want them to be, but everything else is so good that it kind of makes up for it, so that's fine. I think Left Too Soon is really good and has this post-rock kind of swell to it, and it's a little bit longer.
It made me feel things.
It is good. It is really good.
A lot of the songs do that. Back to Nothing kind of really encapsulates the solitude of certain moments of the last few years, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Right? Depending on the person, like, y'all go through it, the uncertainty.
You do.
Some of it hit me. Like Nothing Has this year.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
They are a unique band. Joy Formidable does
that. They do that, man.
I don't know what
like
it is.
Like no other Welsh band.
like no other, like, yeah. like no other Welsh band. Yeah. I don't care what your Welsh accent, but she does sound a little bit Welsh on that track where she's whispering, "Gotta feed my dog," which is kind of funny. Because she is Welsh.
In the last album, they sang in Welsh.
They did. Yeah, they did. I think there might be one line in Welsh, or maybe she's just saying something I can't hear. But it sounds like there is one line that's in Welsh.
There is one, I think.
Towards the start, might have been in like chimes or.
But I love Sevier. I actually really love the way the guitar comes in Bring It to the Front.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I started with it, but it kind of sounds kind of clacky and very discordant.
Yeah,
And kind of goes to from your left to right quickly, and that's really kind of like obtusely weird.
Yeah,
and I love when they do that. They do a lot of them. Hitch, but I like to see it coming back in this. Only sounds like them, really.
It does. It does only sound like them.
It's a really interesting Fender sound.
It's
a very Fender-laden band. So, yeah,
very offensive.
Yeah, I don't know.
I just wish that I like their songwriting approach, but I don't think, apart from the big roar, I have yet to hear like a Joy Formidable production that I myself enjoy.
Have you heard the album right after it?
The one with the sheep on the front or
the,
whatever?
The wolf. Sorry. The roses on it.
I have listened to that once or twice.
That's fucking great.
Yeah.
But I think this is their best production yet.
Oh, man. Totally. Easily. Totally disagree. But that's obviously a Your Modest Way Very tough thing.
I AB it. I'm sure you may have as well. But
I think it's night and day. I just think the production sounds a little amateur, honestly, on this.
I don't think so. I think it sounds a lot more bombastic than anything they've done, without being as heavy as the first stuff, because I guess the first stuff was kind of like, these are three instruments.
This is like the
fuzzed up guitar, not doing too much twinkly stuff.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like only Ritzy's vocals doing the verbed out stuff, and now it's now it sounds almost more than the sum of its parts.
What do you think? There's like almost like a thrash metal part at one point. It's like...
Which is that?
It's towards the end. It's the second half.
That's
somewhere.
A really good bit. Where is it? It's in Gotta Feed My Dog.
Oh, is it Gotta Feed My Dog? Oh, it might be. I thought it was the second half. But yeah, it could have been
Gotta Feed My Dog. Yeah, it kind of pauses and does some odd bits that sound kind of like...
Yeah.
Not minus the bear.
I think a lot of those weird parts do sound like that kind of Mutiny on the Bounty.
The other one, what was that band that was your phone cover for a while? With the pink chemical clouds.
Oh, yeah, Mutiny on the Bounty.
Mutiny Bounty, yeah.
Yeah,
that kind of guitarist tone.
Yeah, or so. Like Tree Top Tigers, that sort of thing. Yeah, definitely, I can hear that. I almost feel they're trying to get their value for money out of a whammy pedal they bought, though, on some of it. Like, there's so much of that kind of...
I don't think it's as obnoxious as some bands do it,
but it is there an awful lot in this album.
Yeah,
like there's like nearly every song has like a little whammy pedal part.
Like you hear it with bands like
I mean Asa, we could do it all the time.
That's true.
I like Bicurious uses it on nearly, like that's nearly their sound, like Alpha Male.
Like While She Sleeps, I can't stand how much they use the whammy pedal.
Oh yeah,
but I like where it is in this. It's almost like, doesn't occur to me that they're using they don't like keep on pushing on it. They're just they keep it on a level. Just, you know, a lot of variety in
so
this.
Where does this stack up for you in terms of like their, because you're obviously super familiar with older albums, mm-hmm. so where does it stack up for you?
It's not the poppiest. It's not the artsiest. It's somewhere in between.
I'd say art is probably the artsiest in terms of it tries the most things and experiments the most,
but it falls short with production. I think this lifts the production up a bit more. There's a bit more girth to this. It sounds a little less. The first album, the one you like, sounds a bit foggier than this album. This album has a good bit more clarity. They've obviously learned.
Yeah.
As much as you may disagree,
I don't know. I don't think the Big Roar has fantastic production. I think the Joy Formidable are waiting.
Just has different production.
I think they're waiting for a producer to produce them in as lush a fashion as I think they deserve, because I think
this has it almost just very close. It's the most perfect they've been yet to what the current sound design is. While not like crumbling at the seams. I think it's their most accomplished record yet, for sure.
Interesting.
This is a good mix. Just a very good mix.
It definitely doesn't take as many chances as Earth. It's definitely more like, it's like, this is the sound of the Joy Formidable.
That's why I say accomplish, yeah.
Like, this is the setting at the stall. This is what we do.
It's not the riskiest, but it feels the most Joy Formidable.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah. God, I love this record.
It depends on when you catch me. I think sometimes I listen to it, I'm like, yes, so, and then sometimes so I'm like, eh.
My one qualm is, it's just the tiniest nitpick, and that's kind of the intro, the chimes, where I think the stop and start with the drums kind of gets me a little bit.
I found chimes a little, I find sometimes a little tiring to listen to, just depending on
it gets good.
But yeah, I think chimes is a little bit of a kind of killer's modern glam thing going on.
Well, it feels the most paint by numbers, Joy Formidable. It's kind of riffs and riffy riffs. Yeah, it just kind of seems like it's just going.
Yeah.
But then, of course, Sevier kind of picks that up and goes for something totally new.
I think this actually is probably a grower for me.
I'd say don't hold your horses yet.
I won't hold my horses just yet. Don't count your plates before they're hatched.
For me, second listen, it got me fully.
Yeah, probably five or six in, maybe seven. But there's every bits I really, really enjoy.
I would truly say this is definitely more of a 10. Than Arth was in hindsight.
Oh, okay.
Since Arth turned to kind of an 8, I think this is the 10 for me.
This is a 10?
Mm-hmm.
10 for 10.
It's totally emotionally resonant.
Yeah, great.
Just what
10
else,
out of 10.
What else can I say to you?
What's your favorite track? Can you even say?
I think it's kind of the stretch from Back to Nothing and Only Once.
Okay.
It just does something there.
We'll give you that's
really cool. And Back to Nothing is the one.
Okay, Back to Nothing is the one. All right, cool.
I will go back to my friends. Great kind of mimic of the guitar. It's perfect.
Yeah,
that's the perfect Joy Formidable song.
That is a good song.
Sorry.
I know we're doing favorite songs. I don't love the kind of like whipping out the acoustic guitar at a party vibe of Somewhere New, but...
I think that sounds Ridian a bit kind of Mac.
Does like
that
a Grafton good. Street, like, blah, 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 but that's
he's
fine.
He's got a great voice. He's got a fucking solid set of pipes.
Yeah, it's solid. It's solid. It's fine.
It sounds very Mick Fleetwood as well.
Yes, it does. Yeah, it does actually. I think I take Gotta Feed My Dog is my favorite track.
Yeah, that's a
really good song.
Great mood.
Yeah. I think I'd probably give it a 7 myself.
Oh, that's fair.
But you know me, I'm so all about production.
It's debatably the song, it's debatably like the album of the year for me. Thus yet.
Let's far. Debate. There's a I few can't other, wait for the
I,
end of the year.
I think a few others hit this mood for me, but I think this is the one that was kind of like, oh, these are my old reliables hitting that 10 out of 10. And that's even more satisfying.
Yeah. We'll talk about it again in a couple of months. That is Into the Blue by The Joy Formidable. Nice. And that brings us to the end of the show. What time are we? My eyes are so blurry.
Oh, I don't even know. An hour and a half.
Okay, it's turned into a reasonably long one. So thank you so much for sticking with us all the way through. And hopefully that you found something that you can enjoy. I think, you know, a kind of epic indie breakbeat, sort of black gaze and... whatever, you know, like industrial pop, you know, there's always probably going to be something there you'll enjoy this week. So do check out those records and do get in touch with us if you would like to speak with us. You'll find us at Kill Shuffle on all of the social medias, and you can follow our playlist on Spotify, find the show on Spotify, and just be well. You don't have to do any of that stuff. I'm not going to force you.
Yeah, don't need to go out.
Stay inside, everybody. Freedom Day is only a month away. Well, yes. 6 weeks. Yes. So if we can all just get there, we can go to gigs again.
Yes. Knock on wood. Knock on wood, please.
Stay strong.
Doodles.
Bye.